All right, the next matter on our docket is a case of Clark versus Commonwealth. Ms. Miller, how are you today?
How
about you, Your Honor? Ms. Dunperio, how are you?
Good.
Did you all sign in already?
We did.
All right. All right, Ms. Miller, you have 15 minutes. Would you care to reserve any of that time for rebuttal?
5 minutes, please, Your Honor.
All right, we'll be glad to hear from you when you're ready.
Your Honor, I'm going to start by separating out and perhaps saving the court some time and some questions with respect to identity. There are three dates, July 21st, July 1st, and August 12th. On those three dates, there were actually eyewitnesses. And at that period of time, the issue would then be one of whether or not, because the conclusions of the fact finder may only be disturbed on appeal if the court finds the testimony was inherently incredible. So for those three dates, although there are inconsistencies, quite bluntly, my problem is whether or not it would rise to the level of inherently incredible on those three dates. And let us just say conceit can be such an ugly word. However, on those three dates, I would ask to just stand on my brief.
Right.
The issue that I would like to bring up before the court, though, are the dates of July 7th and July 16th. On those two dates...
Before you leave July 1st, I don't know if you ever bothered to look at the indictment there, but the indictment for July 1st, I understand, the offense occurred at Home Depot, or was alleged to have occurred at Home Depot. The indictment says Lowe's. So, once upon a time when I practiced law, people actually looked at the charging document to decide what they either had to defend or what they had to prosecute. Apparently, that isn't the case anymore.
And I'll be quite honest, I could very easily have missed that, Your Honor.
Okay.
Obviously,
it's nothing we can do about it at this point because it's not been raised in the trial court, it's not been raised on appeal, but I just point that out. It's probably served up as a habeas at some point down the road because clearly the evidence is insufficient on that point since they charged a different victim than what they actually proved. So.
And I can't say that it's something I just missed.
Okay.
With respect to that, so there's nothing.
All right, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I wanted to
Going
about
then
that.
To July 7th and July 16th, Your Honor, with respect to those two, what the court has is strictly a video, and the court has the loss prevention officer, who in fact goes ahead and says, "I know it's him. I can tell it's him based on the look of him. He wasn't there at the time that the incident actually occurred. He did not, under any circumstances..."
Wasn't he watching the video, though?
He was not that day. He went back later and decided to go through all the videos and to see if they could find any videos that would specifically match up and determine whether or not that person would match him or not. And so that's how he ended up finding these other videos. It's not that he was in, and I've had a variety of those cases, Your Honor, where you've got the loss prevention officer in his particular room looking at those videos, and when he does in fact see it go down, he's following him, he's looking at him more directly, and can tell. This is strictly directly from the video. And when he was being questioned about how he could tell, because the videos are not under any circumstances.
Let me interrupt you. Would you agree there was no hearsay objection or any sort of objection to him testifying from what he observed on the video?
I objected, Your Honor, to him testifying as to what was being observed on the video, that the video itself should stand for itself. Did I argue it as hearsay? No, I didn't. Okay, but I did object that the video solely and directly was all there was. The video specifically, and I believe the case law allows him to testify as to the video because it came from his store. But
he certainly authenticated the video and laid the foundation for it.
But I did not argue hearsay.
Okay, I understand. All right.
All I specifically argued with respect to that is he could not tell any differently from the video itself, and that would be solely for the fact finder to be able to look at the video and determine it. And the court allowed the witness himself to go ahead and argue that, yes, it was in fact him.
This is a sufficiency issue on appeal, is it not?
It is, Your Honor.
Well, let's, for, hypothetically, if we eliminate all the eyewitnesses and just, you know, have the evidence of the video, why wouldn't that be sufficient to establish that your client is the thief?
Well, I would say on that it was inherently incredible, Your Honor.
The video is inherently incredible?
The determination that looking at the video and being able to tell that that person was, in fact, the individual that was my client would
but
be
isn't that for the prior fact to determine by looking at the video and then
it would
making
be
that
for,
determination?
It would be for the prior fact to determine, but when you look at the video and when the witness was actually testifying and put forth what his clip was from it, and that's part of what's specifically in the appendix, the picture of him. There is no way to tell, even with the fact finder looking at that video, because the video is so indistinct. So looking at the video, the fact finder, in my view, was relying on the evidence of the loss prevention officer who's saying, I know it's him, not specifically on the video. Because the video, when looking at the video, when specifically dealing with what the video was, what you have on that video is something that is so indistinct you can't tell. And what
But I mean, isn't that like beauty in the sort of in the eye of the beholder? In other words, just Malvo's question is, if all there is the video, and it is what it is, it shows what it shows, and a fact finder looks at it and looks at the video and then looks at your client and says, oh, they're the same person.
But
how do we second guess that?
The problem is I think that and that's my problem, because I think the fact finder specifically
and it is your problem. It's a big problem.
I understand, Your Honor, but I think the fact finder was relying on what was being said by the loss prevention officer, as the loss prevention officer was saying it was him, and not so much the video. And my problem is in trying to parse out the two, because when
we would have to say as a matter of law that the evidence was insufficient in its totality. In other words, we would have to say that even if you eliminated the eyewitness testimony, the so-called, I'll put eyewitness in quotes since it's really not talking about an eyewitness situation, but if we eliminate the testimony and just say the video is what it is, we would have to say that no human being could possibly identify any particular individual from that video, wouldn't we?
Yes, you would, and that's what I'm asking the court to do.
Okay.
Because I don't believe in looking at that video that that person could be identified as anybody. In looking at even the clip that is part of what is Defendant's Exhibit Number 1 that's in the appendix, the court could see that there's also in the appendix there are six pictures involving a lineup, and any of those six pictures could match that clip. It's absolutely impossible to tell, as a matter of law, Your Honor, from that video by itself, that that person is my client.
Well, while we could certainly maybe look at the video and look at the photo lineup and decide for ourselves whether or not a fact finder could equate the two, if we weren't in the courtroom at the time of the trial, which we weren't, how could we say that a fact finder couldn't look at the video and look at your client sitting at counsel table and say the same?
Your Honor, in looking at the video, the face is so indistinct. That's the issue with the video. The face is so entirely indistinct. What you have on the individual is you have a pair of glasses and you have dark clothing and a hat. And because dark clothing and a hat and glasses matched in the past what had been what the individual wore, but it's not any particular clothing. It doesn't say eat at Joe's or something like that on the outside of it. So it is not something that is readily identifiable other than the person's wearing sunglasses and a hat. In Virginia Beach, wearing sunglasses and a hat is not something so unusual in the July months. And so you're having the fact that he's wearing dark clothing, a hat, and a cap, but that's it. You can't tell from that video. It is so indistinct. There are some places where video is so good that I've in the past told my client that they better have a twin defense because I've looked at the video and looked at my client and said there's no way that's getting past a fact finder.
Was it the 16th, July 16th offense? My memory may be confused about that, but I thought at one point one of the clerks confronted him at the paint counter face-to-face.
No, that was not on July 16th. What it was, Your Honor, is I believe a week before that he had confronted him face-to-face and then later goes back and looks at the videos, but I don't believe it was on the exact date that occurred.
Right.
So, and that's why he said, I was able to see him face-to-face, so then in going back through the video, I'm able to say that's him. But again, in looking at that video and the fact that you have other people certainly stealing from Lowe's, you don't specifically have enough to be able to tell that that is in fact my client, even with my client sitting right in there. And certainly...
Let me just interrupt you and point out you're getting into your rebuttal time. You can keep going and use it if you want, but I just bring that to your attention. You can finish what you were saying.
I'll mention the conspiracy very quickly then, Your Honor. With the conspiracy, Your Honor, what you have is the issue of two people going through the store looking at things, and then you have the one individual, not my client, leaving the store before my client leaves the store. Then at that juncture, what you do in fact have is the other individual is seen pointing things out. And then when he does in fact leave, he goes ahead at that point and says that there's no real discussion between them. My client leaves the store with the goods, goes past all points of sale at that juncture. And when he goes past all points of sale and gets out to the car, the only other thing you see as far as the conspiracy part of it, Your Honor, is you see that the one individual that's already at the car helps him load the car. And I would say,
couldn't the fact of pointing out by the other individual be considered an overt act?
I wouldn't say so, Your Honor, simply because every individual has been in a store and points things out they want to other people. That by itself is not an overt act. Certainly, if he thought the other individual was going to buy the stuff, there is no proof that there was any agreement between the two at that point, just that he pointed some things out, that they wandered around the store, and that the other individual left and went back to the car. And there's no proof that it was anything other than him relying on my client to go ahead and purchase anything. And certainly the Commonwealth had noted they're in the store together and they were loading the items in the car together, so that's conspiracy. And I would argue that that was the Commonwealth's argument, and that itself does not make conspiracy.
All right. You have about a little under 3 minutes left.
Thank you.
Ms. Dunperio? You all don't read the indictments in your office either, apparently, right?
Sorry, pardon?
You all don't read the indictments in your office either, apparently.
I missed that, Your Honor.
Just for your benefit, you might want to check out a case called Sutphin versus Commonwealth. You'll see where this is not the first time that's occurred. So
okay.
You might want to make a note of that.
May it please the Court. Brittany Dunperio for the Commonwealth. The evidence was sufficient to convict Clark of conspiracy, robbery, and 3 counts of grand larceny. The trial court's convictions were neither plainly wrong nor were they without evidence to support them and should be affirmed.
Could you address the argument about the video being so indistinct that you cannot say that any identification could be made just based on the video?
So, Your Honor, I don't think that is accurate.
Well, tell me why.
Yes.
I'm sure you don't think that. You're not agreeing with that, but why?
So I think that the trial judge had the opportunity to observe the defendant in person, and then on the videos, he had the ability to compare videos from the different dates together and could see that there's similar height, similar movements. And then in addition, there's also the testimony of Mr. Janney, the loss prevention manager, officer.
He was the video commentator.
Yeah. But he did have the opportunity on August 12th to interact with Clark in person and also to observe him on camera, so he did see that live. He testified on August 12th that he had only been 3 to 4 feet away from Clark, that he absolutely got a good look at his face, that Clark was wearing a black shirt, sunglasses, and no hat on that date.
Well, let me interrupt you again, because I think Judge Nunziata's question was with respect to the video. What if all we had was the video? In other words, what if we had to exclude all the testimony as being improperly admitted regarding, you know, the identification, the witness identification from the video, and the video alone were what we had to rely on for a sufficiency analysis? What would be your position there?
I think that the trial court could have determined that, beyond a reasonable doubt, that Clark was the person that committed grand larceny on July 7th and July 16th, based in part on the height and the movement and how he walked throughout the
other
store.
Other circumstances that go to one's physical appearance,
yes,
other than facial features, is that, that's what you're saying?
Yes, yes. Yeah, it's more than just only the face. It's everything.
Well, even just facial features. One's the shape of the face, I suppose.
Yes.
How about the scene? Could that have been considered, the scene that's depicted in the video?
I believe that could have been considered, yes.
It was in the store.
Yes, he was in the store.
In a certain part of the store, too.
Yes, was he was by the chainsaws.
An implicated part of the store.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then on July 7th and July 16th, Mr. Janney, he testified that on, well, July 7th, that Clark wore a black shirt, black pants, a hat, and sunglasses. And he explained that he wore the same sunglasses, he could tell through the video, on July 7th as he did on other occasions in the store. And then on July 16th, Mr. Janney testified that Clark was wearing the same black hat in the video that he had worn the previous Sunday when they also had a separate face-to-face interaction that did not result in any charges or anything like that. Additionally, Mr. Janney explained that he was able to recognize that Clark was the perpetrator on July 7th and July 16th because the video depicted him with the same height, nose, and manner of walking as it did on their other interactions together as well. Now, on the issue of conspiracy stemming from July 1st, 2016, the record establishes through the video and eyewitness testimony that Clark was working with a second individual to steal numerous items throughout the store. They entered the store separately, but then met up near the generators, and they worked...
That alone, I want to comment on the fact that they enter separately, but meet up in a, what, pre-designated by inference place?
Yes.
That was a bit of a long way of putting it. By inference, a pre-designated place where the thefts occur, in fact.
Yes.
Is that part of your conspiracy theory?
Yes, it is. And it's not just that they met up in
part
of it.
Pardon my conspiracy theory. I beg your pardon.
The trial court...
That's such a good straight line. I'm going to leave it alone.
don't say it.
The trial court made factual findings that they had intricate movements throughout the stores. They went to the generator section, the hardware section. One was pulling a cart. The other was walking in front. Sometimes they walked separately down different aisles. Sometimes the suspect, second suspect, the unnamed one, had staged the cart in certain areas, like slightly far off from Clark. And the trial court also found that they did not move haphazardly. They didn't wander through the store. Their movements were specific. They were deliberate. They moved in combination.
Did they meet up in the parking lot as well?
Pardon?
They met up in the parking lot as well.
Yes, they left at slightly different times, but then they met up in the parking lot. And this was when all three of the eyewitnesses, Mr. Rocket or Ms. Rocket or Mr. Osero and Mr. Brackley, all witnessed Clark and the second suspect loading the items in the car together. And then the second suspect ultimately drove the car off, and Clark rode in the passenger seat of the car. And then at the very end, Clark got out of the car to move a cart that was in the way, got back in the car, and then the second suspect drove off. So I think all of that together, it's clear that you can infer from the overt acts that there was a conspiracy, because it's apparent that they were working towards the same object and they had the same goal together. If there are no further questions, then I ask that this judgment be affirmed.
All right, thank you, Ms. Lenferrier. Ms. Miller?
Your Honor, with respect to the conspiracy and going back towards that for a moment, what they were essentially doing was shopping. They talk about intricate movements and everything of that nature, but certainly two people go in a store, one points out objects to another, and whether or not they go in at the same time or separately, one certainly could be in the car, one goes in a couple of minutes after the other. They go around the store, they look at different things that they want, and the one leaves. There is, beyond that, no proof with respect to any kind of agreement between the parties. Simply pointing out some things and leaving is the sole basis of the conspiracy. And then he loads the car, or helps them load the car, when they get back into the car. Having someone wait in a car for the other person to come out is also not anything so unusual that it would rise to the level of an agreement on a conspiracy. With respect to...
Just the fact that there was no payment for those items play into this analysis at all?
I wouldn't say so, because the one gentleman leaves. So whether or not he knows that Mr. Clark, who leaves after him, has not paid for it, he doesn't know whether or not he's paid for it or not paid for it. Certainly, ultimately, it leads to
the
charge.
But with respect to your client, who's engaged in the activities that were just described by the Commonwealth, and then doesn't pay, is there some implication that by inference that this was by agreement?
I wouldn't say that there's any inference, because certainly...
The co-conspirator, if I can use that term, excuse me, I don't mean to prejudge it, but the second individual left and didn't pay.
Well, certainly...
And your client didn't pay.
Well, he leaves my client in the actual store, Your Honor,
right.
And many times two people go in a store. One is the one that pays, the other doesn't.
True, and I understand you can make that argument, but my question, is it not a reasonable inference that can be utilized to establish the conspiracy among all the others were articulated?
I would argue that the fact that he didn't hand him money is perhaps suspicious, but suspicion does not
rise. No, on the issue of conspiracy.
No, I understand that. But as to the issue of conspiracy, does it rise to the level of an inference that then would, in fact, be one that could be used in the conspiracy? I would say not, simply because individuals don't pay all the time. One person is left in the store, the other leaves. I wouldn't go to the level of making that an inference as far as the agreement, Your Honor.
No, I meant conjoined with all that other behavior. All that other behavior.
I was trying to avoid all the other behavior.
Yeah, okay, I got it.
Certainly.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Your time is up. We'll come down to Greek Council and then take up the matter of Joshua Rodriguez Wood against the Commonwealth.